Joining me first is Dr. Peter McCullough. Dr. McCullough, Happy New Year. Welcome back to Lindell TV.
Happy New Year. Great to be back.
Hope you and your family had a great Christmas and holiday and New Year. There's so much going on in the news today. I'm going to have you just give us a report here in a minute, because I know you always have so much to say that I don't even know what you're going to say, so I just let you run, and it ends up being a great report. But I do want to have you comment on what so many people are talking about today. Logan, if we want to show this screenshot, life insurance CEO says deaths up 40% among those 18 to 64 years of age. And the guy at this life insurance company, which has been around, I think it was since 1887, said, I don't know if you saw this or not, he said, and when we saw just in third quarter, we're seeing it continue in the fourth quarter, is that death rates are up 40% over what they were pre-pandemic, Davison said during an online news conference last week. Quote, just to give you an idea of how bad that is, a three sigma or a one in 200 year catastrophe would be 10% increase over pre-pandemic. So 40% is just unheard of, he added. And then he goes on from there to talk about, again, how huge these numbers are. He said these numbers are huge, huge. Have you seen this? Because a lot of people are talking about this today. Have you seen this report? And if so, what do you make of this?
You know, that report is certainly trending across the public news wires, but also the scientific news wires. And it's coming on the heels of a report from Columbia University by first author Pantazatos and Seligman. And what they did is they took U.S. Census data, as well as the Vaccine Administration data, and came up with estimates of vaccine-induced death, since it's well described by the CDC VAERS system that, in fact, death does occur after the vaccine. And they came up with a shocking number. Their number of deaths from the U.S. vaccine program from June of 2021 to August of 2021 was over 170,000. It was astronomical, and they estimated that the under-reporting ratio for the VAERS system was actually about 20 or so. So that was a disturbing report. I know it's ecological data, but coming on, it's cohesive with this report out of the insurance industry that something's going on, whether it's death after vaccination or it's death due to cardiovascular or cancer causes where there may have been a delay in the diagnosis because of the pandemic, or in fact, it's death due to COVID-19, the respiratory illness. It's probably a confluence of all those, but it's never good in modern times to actually have death get worse over time. In general, we're improving with mortality, not getting worse.
So these numbers are, I mean, unheard of, are they not?
They are. They're way out of line, and it's disturbing. So again, to kind of enumerate the causes, it could be vaccine-induced related death, COVID-19 respiratory illness death, and then basically advanced deaths due to cancer or heart disease due to delayed recognition or impaired treatment. Those would be kind of the four leaders.
They went on in the report to talk about the number of claims due to injury. The people didn't die, but they were injured. And so, again, is that vax injured? I'm assuming it must be vax injured.
It's cohesive that vaccine injuries, we know in the CDC VAERS system, in the December 24th issue, you know, we hit 21,000 individuals who have died shortly after the vaccine, and then we have over 350,000 people who were injured enough to be hospitalized to go to urgent care or office visits. In total, the number of injuries is over a million reported. About 200 million have taken the vaccine, now a million injured with the vaccine, and sadly, it's over 36,000 that are permanently disabled. So they have to live with whatever's happened to them after the vaccine.
So now we're in the middle of Omicron. First, I guess it was Delta, and then Omicron. And do you see more variants coming?
Boy, I hope not. You know, Omicron's kept us busy just because frequency. 2 days ago here in Dallas, they announced 25% positivity rate at testing centers. That's one of the highest numbers we've seen. It's almost, we tell patients now, the lines are so long, you might as well assume you have Omicron. What we know with Omicron is that it is carving out a gigantic ecological niche, because we learned in a paper from Hong Kong University University, it can replicate 70 times faster than Delta. And because of this fast replication speed and because of a unique capacity for Omicron to basically shut the immunologic door on Delta and actually provide immunity against Delta, no doubt Omicron will become the hyper-dominant variant. It'll rapidly replace the Delta variant. Now, we know that Omicron has broken through natural immunity. It was the first strain that broke through that natural immunity, which for so long was robust, durable, and complete, no more. Now, with Omicron, it's broken through natural immunity. Someone who's naturally immune can get a brief a viral syndrome, the same as those vaccinated, completely breaking through the vaccine, and in fact, also affecting the residual unvaccinated out there. There's not that many unvaccinated COVID-naive individuals out there in the United States. The CDC in October estimated 146 million people had already had COVID, and then 200 million have taken the vaccine. Well, we only have 330 million people in the United States, so almost everybody's covered here. The good news on Omicron is almost always universally mild and brief. Mild and brief outside of just local measures like oral nasal virucidal washes with povidone iodine and dilute betadine and maybe some over-the-counter nutraceuticals and supplements. Very few people need treatment. Very few. I've had an occasional person in my practice, a very elderly senior with severe symptoms, go for monoclonal antibodies. And here, the only monoclonal antibody that's going to work against Omicron is Sotrovimab, the GSK product. That means that we no longer can use the Lilly or the Regeneron products, which especially Regeneron, that was our workhorse for the last year in the pandemic.
So what do you, Omicron, is that something? I was talking to someone, I think it was Dr. Zev Zelenko the other day. He said pretty much everybody's going to get this. Is that your take as well?
Yeah, I'm preparing all my patients that they're going to get it. It was in my house for the Christmas. And so I had a chance firsthand to experience it myself, but also see it from age 5 to age 98. Age 5 to 98, and it's almost always uniformly a mild syndrome. A few people need treatment. Again, people who have older with various medical problems would need some treatment with oral drugs. We're going to welcome in the new Pfizer drug, a combination protease inhibitor, the new Merck drug. Of course, we have our standbys, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, then the use of the other drugs that we use. But again, it's brief and it's mild. And the only people who can end up in the hospital are those who are untreated. So we want everyone to seek early treatment. A recent report by Abdullah and colleagues from Africa demonstrated that the inpatient mortality rate with Omicron is 1%. 1%. We knew previously from the U.S. Stop COVID program that ICU mortality is still 30% in the United States with the legacy variants. And in a paper by 1040 and colleagues from the government-funded Ivy Network, in fully vaccinated people, the inpatient COVID mortality is between 6 and 7%, unvaccinated between 8 and 9%. So let me tell you, 1% mortality is night and day from the previous variants. And I would estimate that if Americans get early treatment, that we can get this mortality rate far below 1%, and we can breathe a lot easier at night.
Did you see the report recently that basically the flu was not existent last year? What was the report? Like 300 and some odd people had the flu? I mean, are we really to believe that number?
It's not tenable. And what we know is that almost certainly the PCR misled us, and those who had the flu that were being tested with COVID PCR testing, they were actually labeled with COVID instead of flu. And that's unfortunate. We'll never know how much flu there really was. But invariably, there could have been large numbers of seniors last year inappropriately with influenza and inappropriately diagnosed as COVID, put into isolation, receiving remdesivir, dexamethasone, and other treatments, which would have been wholly unacceptable for treating influenza. So the CDC has a lot to answer for its PCR test, which was just retired because of this flu COVID misdiagnosis. Now this year we heard flu is back because now we're off of the CDC standards and we're using conventional, you know, the Roche, Abbott, LabCorp, Quest, those PCR tests were fine. They didn't have problems distinguishing flu from COVID.
So tell me tonight, doctor, what is on your mind? What are you seeing? What do you want to report to our audience tonight?
I think the single greatest concern now is we had now clear-cut evidence published in JAMA very recently by Yang Zhu through the U.S. vaccine program that with Delta, the current vaccines were effectively useless. That was Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. They had in that JAMA paper vaccine efficacy of only 20%. So we know that once Delta shaded in, the vaccines were providing very little protection whatsoever. Now with Omicron, the estimates are that none of the vaccines would provide any utility. And all the vaccine manufacturers, within days of the Omicron news breaking, announced that they were going to start new vaccine programs to try to cover Omicron. Omicron is so brief and mild that it doesn't appear as if it ever be worth it to ever take another vaccine or a booster. I do agree with the public health measures of delaying the school opening, because following the data from South Africa, Denmark, and elsewhere, it's a very brief and tall outbreak. We actually have more COVID cases now than we've ever had before, but it may just be a brief explosion and then come right back down. It's great news that Omicron is closing the door on Delta in terms of immunity, and let's hope we don't get another variant as a result of the ill-advised vaccine program. We know that Omicron arose out of the fully vaccinated, as originally described as some travelers on the border of Botswana.
And we are seeing, of course, people that are on cruise ships that are 100% vaxxed, and yet they're all coming down to Omicron. So again, the vax isn't working.
It should be completely clear now to those who are still advancing the vaccine agenda that the vaccines have completely failed. And you're right, there are fully vaccinated. There was a group of fully vaccinated explorers down in Antarctica, as far away as anybody could be from another part of civilization. And of course, there was an outbreak down there, and it was clear that the vaccines have failed. In fact, there's a paper, even before Omicron, published in Lancet by Singarangam, that demonstrated that 39%, even with the legacy variants, 39% of transmission was from fully vaccinated to fully vaccinated. So I think we're at a good point right now, Brandon, to go ahead and drop all the vaccine mandates. We could actually drop them. We don't need a Supreme Court hearing on this. And then we can pause the U.S. vaccines for a deep dive on safety and efficacy, and we figure out where things went wrong.
But I agree with you 100%, and I wish that would happen. But it seems as though the Biden administration is doubling down. I mean, this idea of not requiring mandates of vax onto truckers, he hasn't backed away from that idea, yet they're saying this would collapse the trucking industry. We have the head of American Truckers Association polling saying that about 40% of the truckers would walk off. I mean, can you imagine the devastating impact that would have on our just-in-time inventory and supply? We have Fauci talking about mandating, you know, COVID passports to fly. Dr. Peter McCullough, they don't seem to be backing down one iota in the face of science, do they?
You know, we have to wonder really what's going through their minds. You know, talking to pilots, I know what they're afraid of. They're afraid of blood clots, because the cockpit is a very tight area and they cannot get up and move their legs. And after they take the vaccine, now we know the spike protein is in the human body probably for many months, if not a year or more. So there may be a year's risk of increased thrombosis, what's called venous thromboembolism. And so the concern about a pulmonary embolism or pulmonary death of a pilot is very concerning. One of the lead plaintiffs in a lawsuit in the military, Lieutenant Colonel Teresa Long has articulated this very well at the U.S. Senate hearings on vaccine injury and safety. And we can't be more concerned about pilots, truck drivers. Individual health basically influences the safety of others around them, particularly passengers or other people in cars around trucks.
Talk to us about herd immunity. Is this whole Omicron thing going to end up helping us get herd immunity and move on with life or not?
We're talking to viral epidemiologists and immunologists right now. I can't get a read on herd immunity. Some people have described Omicron as a mild, in a sense, immunologic re-challenge. So if someone is naturally immune from alpha, beta, gamma, delta, and they get Omicron, it's like in a mild immune re-challenge. It's almost like taking a polio booster or something along those lines, because it is so mild. And in fact, that may better enhance and extinguish the Delta outbreak. But having said that, this pandemic has given us every twist and turn we can possibly imagine. Many were surprised when Omicron broke through natural immunity. So in a sense, it broke this principle of herd immunity. I think the goal was to get to zero cases, but I think Omicron's broken all the rules.
So you were recently on Joe Rogan's program, is that right?
Yeah, I went 15 rounds in the man cave with Joe Rogan in Austin, Texas, and I received word that it had the highest number of listeners, I guess, and viewers to the podcast in the history of the Joe Rogan Experience.
Congratulations.
You know, I told many that, you know, I told Joe Rogan really nothing different than I told Tucker Carlson in a breakout interview in May of 2021. I think so much about it, though, really has to do with the listenership. He has got a great listenership, and what I'm told is he actually was quiet. He was listening more than he usually talks, but I think he was surprised at how extensive the evidence was and the fact pattern was for the suppression of early treatment in order to promote mass vaccination. I just think he couldn't grapple with the idea, and he had just had COVID-19 himself. I told him he received the McCullough Protocol, which is now copyrighted. He received exactly how I drew it up for the nation. He realized he breezed through COVID-19. He probably had Delta, which you know, has been fatal in people his age. So I think many ways this was a crystallization in his mind of what's going on. You know, he followed up within about 2 weeks of interviewing Robert Malone, who's a preclinical scientist, a physician, who's contributed to the development of messenger RNA. And Malone has expertise in bioethics, and I think that interview focuses on a lot more of the bioethics and the governmental forces at play. But those two interviews are getting a lot of attention, particularly with younger audiences.
How does someone know if they've got Omicron or they've got the flu? I had COVID originally in February of 2020. I caught it early. A guy in my studio that had just returned from China, and then within 3 days, I was sick as a dog. Sickest my wife had ever seen me in our 30 years of marriage at the time. And so I was pretty sure I had it. I had all kinds of side effects that one of my medical doctor friends who I went to dinner with was telling, I was telling him some of the side effects. He said he works in an ER, and he said, oh, yeah, you definitely had COVID. And it took me several months to get back. I mean, my energy level and other things that were a side effect of it took a while. I breezed right through since then. Until last week. I got something. I don't know what I got, but right now I'm sweating through this jacket. I've not missed a show. I literally sleeping 15, 16-hour days. I get up into the studio today at noon. My show started at 1. I got off the air at 2. I went back to bed. I got up at 4:30. Produced the news and was ready to go live with Mike from 6 to 7, and now with you till 9, then I'll go back to bed, sleep probably till noon tomorrow until I finally knock this thing out. I'm telling you, this is the worst I've been since I had COVID in 2020. My wife has got it. She was worse than I was. I'm now worse than she was. Dr. Zev Zelenko got her on HCQ. He got her on vitamin C, vitamin D, an antibiotic. She's doing better. She was really bad. We both, Dr. Peter, had stabbing pains on our lower back and extremities, our legs. I woke up the other night like someone was stabbing me in the thighs with a knife, both thighs. I mean, not almost like a muscle cramp, but it wasn't a muscle cramp. It was stabbing, searing pain, kidneys, liver. And I said to Dr. Zev Zelenko, I said, what on earth? He said, It's a bioweapon. Your body is fighting off a bioweapon. Like I said, my wife is doing really well. She got on all these medications. I didn't get as bad as she did, so I saved the medications because I'm trying to save them for other family members, and I've just been fighting it off with Advil, vitamin C, vitamin D, and that kind of thing, and lots of sleep. How would one know, if unless you wanted to go get tested, which I don't, does this sound like Omicron, or does this sound just like a really bad case of the flu?
No, it sounds like Omicron. Remember, the flu is usually short duration and takes a little different pattern. There are multiplex testing. One is by BioFire. I like that one a lot, that test for COVID-19 and influenza in the same test. But it sounds like Omicron. It moves through the family. I have a final febrile family member downstairs I got to check on. Sounds like I should have made a house call on you. You know, my experience is to go early and hard with a few things. Believe it or not, if it's Omicron, the virus is in your nasal cavity, and you should be doing washes with povidone iodine or betadine, that brown iodine solution we use in the hospital. Take 1/2 teaspoon in a shot glass of water and a syringe or a bulb syringe, spray it up your nose over the sink, sniff it back, and spit it out. You know, if you don't have nasal congestion, the source of the fever is in the nose. And it's amazing how quickly people's fever and their constitutional symptoms improve with oral nasal washes. Do that every 4 hours during a COVID-19, the acute illness. And it's been my practice experience, someone like you at your age, Brandon, that they're very responsive to the simultaneous use of ivermectin and prednisone at the same time. That's been my go-to combination. I found that more effective right now than hydroxychloroquine. I've had scores of patients with Omicron.
In the closing minutes here, let me ask you about the HCQ. So my wife takes the HCQ over the ivermectin. But she took the HCQ for a couple days, but then started having these tingling headaches in the back of the head. Is this a reaction to the HCQ, or is this Omicron?
I think it's the Omicron infection, which has a lot of neurologic features like COVID-19 overall, headaches, sinus aches, tingling, various ocular findings, typically not the hydroxychloroquine. And hydroxychloroquine is, you know, supported by more and more studies. It's slightly less effective than ivermectin. But because of the rapid replication cycle of Delta, it's conceivable that ivermectin may play a more immediate role because it has anti-spike protein capabilities that hydroxychloroquine doesn't. And again, we will welcome the Pfizer and Merck drugs. They can't get them here fast enough because we would potentially use them as well.
What were those drugs be? What are those?
Well, the Pfizer drug is a combination of a kinase-like 3 inhibitor. It's a novel drug by Ridgeback Pharmaceuticals, and then an older HIV drug called ritonavir. They're both protease inhibitors. And in the clinical trials program, it reduced the risk of hospitalization and death by over 85%, even though the rates were low in each group. But it's clear, probably by the mechanism of making people feel better and really reducing viral replication, to start early. Now, interestingly, the emergency use authorization for Pfizer is going to be 5 days of therapy. And in clinical practice, for someone like you or others, we may extend it even longer. The Merck drug is called molnupiravir. It's related to favipiravir, much less impressive, only about a 30% benefit.
So let me ask you this in closing. Logan gets it. He's 18. He's through it in a few days. Is that just because young people have such a good immune system?
No, it's just that the virus just can't have a persistent syndrome in young people as it can with old people. And it has to do with the interaction between how the virus interfaces with the pulmonary epithelium and the nasopharyngeal mucosa and the ACE2 receptor. But it's clear, you know, we in my family, Brandon, we had a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 7-year-old. They literally felt a little fever for a couple hours.
Wow.
While the adult, yeah, so it's night and day. Children, I don't have any concerns whatsoever. There may be a child who needs with severe symptoms that needs some early treatment, but it'll clear up very quickly with inhaled budesonide, oral methylprednisolone, some weight-based aspirin. It'll be very quick.
Is there any concern as to longevity or the long-term consequences of having had COVID and having had Omicron? Is the spike protein in COVID as well as in Omicron? Do I have to worry long term, my liver, my kidneys, am I shaving 5-10 years off my life? What am I long term?
I don't want to raise any alarm, but we know from the work by Bruce Patterson, who works out of Northwestern and Stanford. Now he's has a company, Incell DX. It looks like yes. The answer is yes. It's another install of the spike protein. I had it myself too, and I thought about it. So, you know, I just had about a year of getting that out of my body, and now I've got another installation of it. So, hopefully, with Omicron, it's a lot less invasive, a lot less in your body, and just handled in the nasopharynx.
So, how do we get the spike protein out of our body if you're worried about your organs or autoimmune system?
There's no a way of getting it out right now, as far as we know. The body has to clear it out naturally.
Thank you, doctor. Appreciate it. Dr. Peter McCullough checking in.